is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, today it's the power of the vote, crime, the dramatic rise of crime in America. It's a huge story. And the motives behind the CCP and the fact that they're now asking for an award for Wuhan, which is quite an incredible story. Joining us on the broadcast today will be Sergeant Betsy Smith, the spokesperson for the National Police Association, Dr. Li Mengyang, who you heard, the virologist and the whistleblower from China, to discuss the CCP and what's behind that. But there is a lot to talk about. Let's bring on here at the top of the program, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins me. He's the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He's a CIA-trained intelligence operations officer, 35 years experience in global and national security. So we see that Attorney General Merrick Garland announced on Friday that the U.S. Justice Department is suing the state of Georgia over this voting law that has been very contentious in the last few months. And to be sure, Georgia has taken a hit from this, the film industry and businesses and sports and all kinds of things. So this isn't to be taken lightly. They're saying that the controversial measure is intended to restrict ballot access to black voters in the state of Georgia. What do you say, Tony?
So let's break this down into the pieces which make most sense. First off, minorities normally vote, Malcolm, in districts controlled by minorities. All of these districts are so-called, problems with lines. That's all mismanagement, not racism. So if there's issues with that, then the black voters need to look no further than their own leadership. Fulton County, all these other places where they're complaining, they're all controlled by black politicians. So there's no possibility of what they're saying to be true. This other issue regarding food and drink and lines, that's also being taken completely out of context. The idea is you cannot be given food or drink by a political campaign trying to convince you by being nice to you, you need to vote for their candidate. That's what's prohibited. You can have food and drink and line as long as you bring it. So this is where I see consistently by the, I'm to the point of where I just call them a cult, the cult left, where even when laws are put together with the best intentions of maintaining integrity, maintaining the proper focus on one vote counting equally for all, and that vote being cast accurately. And by the way, anytime you have fraudulent voting, you degrade that one vote. You basically take away that one vote and disenfranchise people. So the idea here is to make sure that every individual's vote counts. And I'm sorry to say that what they're saying about the Georgia law and the federal intervention or attempted intervention is, in my judgment, a clear attempt to disenfranchise the citizens of Georgia from having a clear, very fair, very well outlined process for casting their vote. And so I consider it unconstitutional for the federal government to be jumping into what they're trying to do.
Well, and the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, would agree with what you say there. He, in a quote here, first of all, he's calling out Joe Biden, Stacey Abrams, and their allies trying to force an unconstitutional election power grab through Congress. He says Right. Now they are weaponizing the Department of Justice to carry out their far left agenda that undermines election integrity and empowers the federal government to overreach in our democracy. Tony, we're seeing a pushback now with states versus federalism, the federal government, the power of Washington. And there's this fight going on, and at the center of it is the power of the vote. Right. And so with what the governor says there, this isn't just Georgia. This is a lot of red states that are having troubles with the federal government.
So that's the issue, is the states by the Constitution are designated to do their own elections. That's why so much controversy happened from November until January regarding the recording of the Electoral College votes and then the casting of those votes in the Congress. This is all state controlled per the Constitution. H.R. 1, which was the bill which the Democrats passed in the House and then attempted in the Senate, was shut down this past week,
right,
was so vital. They were trying to essentially federalize all elections, which, first off, I would argue, Malcolm, it would not have withstood the constitutional scrutiny of the judiciary. I think the judiciary would have found it was unconstitutional and struck it down pretty quick. With that said, it would have still had the desired effect of creating the perception that there's a problem in a number of states. So I think that's clearly what the left is trying to create here, is a perception of problems. And indeed, I think in the case of Georgia, Texas, Florida, where I think the governors in those states have been very good in trying to create paths forward to maintain integrity, the federal government may well try to jump in, and Joe Biden may push this. It's very dangerous. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. And it is not designed to ensure anybody's vote, Malcolm. It's to ensure the Democrat left is able to continue to cheat by having individuals who are either dead, not properly registered, or otherwise voting to help the Democrats win elections.
This is the pushback to the power grab that everybody was most concerned with, and we're starting to see it now. We're also seeing other things like, you know, bringing D.C. into a state and other things. It's all kind of out in the open now, Tony, with what's happening here. And there's going to have to be pushback like we're seeing now in Georgia and other states. Dick Durbin, the Senate Judiciary Chairman, so he sent a message out there. And listen to this. He said, if Republicans think the fight for voting rights ended with the filibuster of the For the People Act, which, again, the left is pretty good at packaging stuff. They're pretty sharp in that area. They are sorely mistaken, he said. Glad to see the Biden administration is joining this effort. We must protect our democracy. So, you know, I wonder, Tony, does the left really see this as protecting a democracy or versus an absolute power grab? I mean, they have to know the difference between the two.
So, yeah, both could be true in this case. This my answer may surprise you here. So we actually have a republic. We don't have a democracy. So that's why we have a republic, Malcolm, is because the founding fathers had concerns about a pure democracy, basically the tyranny of the vote by a large democracy could sway and essentially destroy minority rights. So our founding fathers did indeed not pick a democracy as our method of government, but a representational republic. So Durbin is not wrong. Mm-hmm. He's just not right in that democracy is not the path forward to preserve our nation. He is simply trying to state that their version of democracy is what they seek so that they can win elections indefinitely and essentially oppress any minority they don't agree with.
That's perfectly said, Tony. And the other argument to your point is the fact that it happens to be called the United States of America. I mean, in 50 United States have a voice in the election, which is the idea of this representative republic, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a point we got to continue to point out, because there has been a lot of push to abandon the Electoral College and make this popular vote the law of the land. And again, it's another piece of the power grab. Goes completely against the framers' vision of what this American experiment was all about. And while we've lasted 245 years at this point, to complete the circle with you, Tony, yeah. Jen Psaki, the spokeswoman for the White House there for Biden, she says that she believes that voting is a fundamental right for the American people. Biden is going to use every lever at his disposal to advocate for that. Now, listen to this. This really got my attention. She told reporters in the briefing room, this was just on Friday now, she said, this is going to be a fight of his presidency. Now, what that told me is that they're not done with this by a long shot. When she says this is going to be the fight of his presidency, I'm guessing now they recognize the importance of this whole deal of the vote in H.R. 1 and what's happening with the states' rights. And I'm wondering, what else do they have that they're going to bring out into the sunlight of day? Do you have any idea? Because that statement got my attention.
Well, I think they're going to do three things that we've already observed some of this. First, you're going to see the Department of Justice weaponized for purposes of trying to promote their version of what they believe their side wants. And you're going to see the chilling effect of Garland launching the FBI off to do investigations to try to intimidate local officials. This is going on right now in Arizona, where they're attempting to try to squelch any review of that election. I think there's a number of other states where they're contemplating doing a similar forensic audit, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Colorado. And I think you're going to see a suppression of this. Secondly, Biden's going to do what he can via the administrative state to try to leverage, if not misinterpret, existing federal laws to, again, try to accomplish what they want relating to unlimited voting access. And third, I think it's very interesting that what we've seen here is this continued this slow expectation of minorities, the soft bigotry of low expectations. I think you're going to continue to see that pushed by the Biden administration. Somehow, Malcolm, that people who are not white are less able to understand the rules. And I'm saying this with all due respect to minority, to my friends who are black. I think they're fed up with it too. They're fed up with somehow the left contemplating on their behalf what they can and cannot do. I think it's going to backfire on them.
You talked about the military a moment ago. I want to talk to you next about this really unbelievable, fascinating story here. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley there, defended the woke agenda in the military. Certainly got my attention there. Yeah. So, all right, this gets heavy, but I definitely know you've got opinions on this thing. So the whole point is we've been talking about this in the military. They're coming up with the whole woke strategy, even the kind of haircut you have and all kinds of crazy things they're doing. And they were up in a meeting on the Hill here, speaking of the two I just mentioned here, the two military guys. And they said here, the pushback I want to get into what they say here. So they say, we don't embrace critical race theory, Austin says, and I think that's a spurious conversation here. We are focused on extremist behaviors and not ideology, not people's thoughts, not people's political orientation. Behavior is what we're focused on. Milley comes out and says, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. So what's wrong with understanding, having some situation understanding about the country for which we are here to defend? All of this was on top of the fact that they're called out for these policies, and that's the answer back. What do you say to this?
So look, first, full disclosure, I know both men personally. I served for Brigadier General Austin in Afghanistan. This is covered in my book, Operation Dark Heart. Austin worked at the time as the commander of CJTF 180. And I know Mark Milley. I was on the transition team, the Trump transition team, and he was the one of the individuals I was working with. He was then the chairman, the chief of staff of the U.S. Army. I had contact with him during that period. So first off, let me state my utter disappointment with both men based on my direct knowledge of their previous thinking on these topics. For General Austin, for example, for him to call out and say there's an issue with extremists in the military bemoans the fact that somehow he made it through to be Secretary of Defense. And as I mentioned, there's a number of other outstanding officers I've worked with over the years who seem to have made it through the system despite the so-called extremism. What he's saying is a non sequitur. That's Latin for does not make sense. And then Milley's comments are equally troubling in that I agree that we all should be aware of competing political systems and ideologies. That's something I personally have studied as a political scientist. I never once espoused to myself those extreme ideas of a system I studied and found to be Marxist in nature. And that's what critical race theory is. Critical race theory is Marxism, where the basic tenets of Marxism, which is class warfare, is replaced with race warfare. The idea of disputes and creating victim classes based on skin color rather than economic class. And Milley is dishonest if he says, oh, I've studied it, and he doesn't mention that as one of the points. Malcolm, he could have said, yes, we've looked at critical race theory. These are the elements of critical race theory, and we understand the dangers of Marxism being included in it. But he didn't say that. He said instead, yeah, I wanted to understand why white rage resulted in the 6 January riots. And I'm white and I want to understand. That's espousing a philosophy, not acknowledging the study. And I think most people recognize that for what it is. It's not a study. It's like you're basically saying you subscribe to it. And oh, by the way, you're smearing all the people who showed up on the 6th of January disputing the results of the election because you're now assigning a value saying that they are critical racists. That's what the problem was with what he said.
I want to get in this last story with you real quickly, my friend, and that is, this was another wild, kind of probably expected, but the New York prosecutors telling Trump lawyers that they're looking potentially at criminal charges this week against his business. And this is quite something. And this gets into their chief financial officer, Ellen Weiselberg, and they're pushing to say there were perks and stuff not accounted for, but they're talking criminal charges against the Trump organization, who specifically we don't know yet. This thing is inflamed with all kinds of political hot buttons. What do you think about this?
So, yeah, look, I think it's a witch hunt. Look, we saw what happened with Rudy Giuliani this past week regarding his suspension from the New York bar. And he tweeted out, and I agree with him, it's like, this would never happen to Hillary Clinton. It wouldn't. So I think we're looking at a continuation of a double, a two-tier legal system, one which clearly exists and is exercised if you're a progressive, the other for everybody else. And unfortunately for the president right now, their former president, they're actually looking at what they can do to make great trouble for him in the legal system in New York. I don't believe for a minute, Malcolm, that these charges are going to be sustainable. I think there may well be charges, and I don't think it's going to be against Trump. I think it's going to be against one of his lieutenants. And, you know, I've heard from my legal friends who are well-studied lawyers, you could get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. Mm-hmm. So I'm not particularly worried. I think it'll all come out in the wash. There's been a number of these things which have really not gone anywhere. And I think this is more just political. This is weaponization of the legal system for purposes of harming a political adversary or a rival. In this case, it's the state of New York, run by Cuomo. By the way, Cuomo, who should be himself indicted based on his death, his murdering thousands of senior citizens. But this is Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio pushing for retribution against President Trump.
That is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Always a great analysis. Now, I want to remind everybody, you've been hearing me throughout the week tell you about Healthy Cell, and I want to take the opportunity to tell you again to look out for your immune system. Take care of yourself, and the way you do that is the health of your cells. And everybody knows with COVID and with any flu, any virus, it doesn't really matter what the flu or virus is, that you, with a healthy immune system, you can battle about anything. And that is a fact. One of the new products with Healthy Cell is called Immune Super Boost. And it is incredible, more so because it empowers your immune system to fight these kinds of things. This has over a dozen immune supplements into a one travel-ready gel pack is what it is. And it's got the echinacea, it's got the A, it's got the D, it's got zinc, it's got all the things you need in there for your immune system to fight COVID and to fight any flu, any virus. And the products of Healthy Cell are second to none. All our listeners get 20% off. That's right. Your first order, 20% off, healthycell.com/outloud, or just click the banner ad back at americaoutloud.com. I've been taking it now for 3.5 years. I highly, highly recommend it, my friends. All right, up next here, we're going to talk with the National Police Association spokesperson, Sergeant Betsy Smith, and the escalation of crime. And then after that, Dr. Lee Mignon and the CCP, and that whole story we'll do a deep dive in. We'll return in just a moment. You're listening to Viewpoint This Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. And the escalation of crime in America's cities is no laughing matter, for sure. This is something we've talked about, we predicted. You know, when you come out with a narrative, defund the police and pull down law and order, I'm not sure what other kind of result they anticipated from that, but I would imagine we're bearing the fruits of that argument right about now. And the question we all have to ask ourselves is, where's the tipping point on this? You know, where really is the tipping point? And what can be done to reverse some of these policies? Keeping in mind that the Marxist left have not changed their ideology, and they're still on this mission to pull the police out of society. It's mind-boggling, people, to see how this is going to work out. Now, let me give you a couple of stats here that truly, I mean, well, they're calling it historic levels. That would be an understatement, I guess. Huh? I see this message put out by the National Fraternal Order of Police. And to give you an example here, we're seeing numbers, you know, just the escalation, the surge, not to, I'm assuming the crime that's already there, this is on top of that, if you can follow me on that, okay? So Atlanta, for instance, you've got an increase in homicides of 58% upward, right? And shootings, 40%, right? Portland, which has become the center of a hellhole of some sort here, you've got a rise of 533% in homicides and shootings, 126%. Again, these are all escalations. And then you've got New York City, they're saying 13% up. You say, well, by golly, that doesn't sound too bad, Malcolm. Yeah, unless it's you or your loved one that gets shot, right? I mean, then it's a big problem. And of course, these are all escalations on what was already there, like Chicago, 5% up. But Chicago already is the center of hell. So when you add all this to it, well, then that's already a pretty good increase there. Just to give you a few stats here, there are plenty more. Let me start off here, and I'd like to bring on to the program Sergeant Betsy Smith joins us. She's the spokesman for the National Police Association. And so, Sergeant Betsy, this whole rallying call of defunding the police, which has been going on now for I don't know how long. When did all that start, actually? Do you remember?
Sure. It started right after the George Floyd incident last May, and right in the middle, of course, of the pandemic. And after George Floyd was died in police custody, all of a sudden this vilification of law enforcement began. And then we had the Rayshard Brooks shooting in Atlanta, and it just went from there. And there were these cries that to defund the police and then to reimagine the police. And that actually, the whole defund the police movement turned out to be a really big disaster for the Democrats. So now they're trying to use other terms like reimagine and things like that. But of course, what we're seeing now, Malcolm, is many of these cities that were quote unquote defunded by their city councils and other politicians, they're having to refund and put millions and millions of more dollars into their police budgets to fight all this violent crime, to try and recruit, hire, and train new police officers, because police officers are abandoning this profession in droves. So yeah, we've got a big problem on our hands. Yeah.
You've never seen this sort of exodus in your entire career, have you?
No, and I've been involved in law enforcement since 1976.
Wow.
And here's the thing, most of the time, no matter where someone is trying to become a police officer, the competition was huge. You know, you would apply for a police job because it takes quite a while to get that job. You know, you have to go through psychological testing, you know, physical agility, pass a very rigorous physical, go to the academy, go through field training, all that. And the competition was very stiff. Only one in every 100 applicants would get hired to be a police officer. And that's totally changed now. But it's very regional, Malcolm. So you go to some of these cities like Atlanta, Portland, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Seattle, you can't get anybody to apply for those police jobs.
You mentioned with Floyd, but, you know, we referenced the defund the police. So the whole schism in law enforcement, in my mind, came back to Ferguson with the hands up, don't shoot, with this whole thing, which was under Barack Obama, number 44's administration. And that's kind of, I'm guessing, Sergeant Betsy, when the war on police kind of really, when I at least became aware of it, like said, wow, what is this all about? And then from there, now, prior to Floyd, seriously, was there any mention? I mean, I don't remember. I don't know. Was there any mention about defunding police or anything before that? Or was that really just after Floyd?
No, I mean, really, this started with Barack Obama and the Beer Summit shortly after he became president. And in fact, the National Police Association has a terrific book out called The Obama Gang. And it really talks about how the Obama administration really started to chip away at American law enforcement and thus American society. So this really did start under the Obama administration. And then unfortunately, the Michael Brown shooting occurred in Ferguson, Missouri. And that was a absolutely 100% good shoot. And yet the media took over on that. There was a little bit of weak police leadership. Because Ferguson's a very, very tiny town outside of St. Louis. And so the media really took off and ran with that. And so did police-hating leftist politicians who were emboldened to do this because they had a guy in the White House who hated cops and hated, you know, regional law enforcement. You know, what one of the goals of the Obama administration, and now I think what we're going to see in the Biden administration, is to federalize all law enforcement, which should frighten every American citizen in this country. You don't want federalized law enforcement.
Right, right. You know, is that where it's going? Is that where it's going?
Absolutely. That's where it's going. And you can see with the Department of Justice right now, with, you know, Merrick Garland, is one of the things he's using is the consent decree, which means the Department of Justice comes in and basically takes over your police department. And as we're seeing right now in Louisville, Kentucky, and what it seems like in Louisville, Kentucky, is it's basically the feds are taking over Louisville Metro PD as punishment for Breonna Taylor, which has, again, has already, that case has been adjudicated. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And that's what when the left talks about reimagining policing, ultimately what they're talking about is just a total federal takeover of law enforcement. Law enforcement in America, by design, is supposed to be very, very regional. Each state is supposed to control their police training and standards. And that's the American way. Because now, you know, then you get a say in your law enforcement. You're not going to have a say if all of our law enforcement is federalized like many other countries around the world.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of bring that up the way you did, because this actually is one of the core arguments we're seeing in a lot of these dialogues we're having. In other words, states' rights and states taking that control back versus federalism and what's happening on the federal government, the overreach of federal government. That really is, truth be told, is the erosion of our republic right there. It's actually the fight of many things I talk to listeners about on a regular basis. And you just point out what should be really obvious to folks, that this is also happening in the law enforcement community. So let me ask you this. If that is the case, Sergeant Betsy, if that's the case, So I was thinking moments ago as you were talking, we were going through some of those numbers, like, okay, so like a lot of these mayors on the local situation and governors and others, you know, I think, okay, so what's their real motive? I always come back to looking at things at 50,000 feet. Like, what's the motive? So like the city councils, they're all engaged. And I've read plenty of stories, like as an example, Sergeant Betsy, Asheville, North Carolina is another one that they say it's become the most dangerous city east of the Mississippi and maybe in the entire country, which blew my mind because it's an absolutely beautiful area. I've been there many times on holiday and it's really quite beautiful and prestige to visit there. I don't imagine I would go there now after reading many of the reports. So what is behind, I mean, where's the logic? There has to be something, a driving mechanism of force with the city councils, the people in the counties that are in charge, the mayors, the governors, as to what is pushing that. They have to know the result. I mean, come on. They've got to know the result is going to be something that you talk about reimagining, that by golly, you're going to have to reimagine the city being whole again. I mean, what's behind this?
Well, I think it's twofold. One, I think that there really are people that get involved in city council or you know, county boards and things like that, who really truly believe that most people are good and the police are heavy-handed. And if we just have enough government programs and jobs and this and that, that people won't commit crimes. I mean, there really is a segment of the population that believes that people who, you know, loot and burn and all that, like AOC said, are just looking for a loaf of bread. They're just looking to feed their families. A lot of people don't realize, Malcolm, that there's just a segment of society that's evil. And but see, American law enforcement, we know that because we see it every day. So there's that sort of naivete, people who sort of believe in a utopian dream of everyone living and working together. I think the other half of these people who sit on these, you know, boards and city councils and things, I think they just want more power. And a lot of this is about power. And America is going to have to decide, are we going to be a country of laws? Right. Or are we just going to be this free for all where we end up having to defend ourselves? And we've got to remember, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but you've got to remember what's happening on the left is they're trying to neuter law enforcement, quite frankly, while taking guns away from law abiding.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about now, because I'm looking at the stats on shootings. And as an example here, Philadelphia is up 27% shootings, Chicago up 18%. And that's on top of already the fact that shootings in Chicago have been off the charts for so long, as far as long as I can remember, actually. Los Angeles shootings are up 51%. New York City, they're up 64%. Portland, of course, Portland is, I mean, it's surreal. Anybody who would live in Portland, I mean, you might as well just call that Evilville and give it to the evil folks and move out, because people, families are suffering badly. It's up 126% and Atlanta's up 40%. So when you look at shootings right now that are escalating in all the cities, and they're also from the studies I've looked at and read, and I'd like you to comment on this, it's not just the urban cities. Let me make this clear with everybody right now, and I want you to verify this, please. But from what I've seen, from what I've looked at in the studies, it is absolutely in the same sort of numbers and stats are in all the smaller cities, suburban areas, rural areas, things of that nature. They're also escalating. So then we start to get into, okay, then the argument of guns, the Second Amendment come into the conversation. I wonder, on the fringes of this conversation, is that another narrative that they're after, maybe to escalate the crime and make it so bad that the, you know, people that are sort of ignorant to the truth might say, oh God, guns are a problem, shootings are up, let's get the guns off the market and forget the Second Amendment. Is that another narrative here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you can vilify firearms, then you can try and take control of that situation. I mean, let's look at my native Chicago. You know, I was born and raised in Illinois. I lived there until 10 years ago. We have and have always had some of the strictest gun laws, not just in Chicago, but in the whole state. You have to have a license in Illinois to even own a firearm. It's very difficult to get a license to legally carry a firearm. And then in addition to those state laws, there are very, very strict city ordinances in Chicago to be able to own a firearm. And yet again, since I've been involved in law enforcement, we have always had these horrific shootings. You know, it's 40 to 70, even 80 shootings a weekend in the city of Chicago. Here's the problem. You know, we have all these gun laws, but we have and have had for many years, we have prosecutors, our state's attorney, we call it in Illinois, is a progressive George Soros funded state's attorney. Her name is Kim Fox, and she will not prosecute so many of these gun crimes. One of the things, and you can see this in, you see this in Portland, you see this in Los Angeles County. There's something that they're trying to do to make sure that a certain segment of the population doesn't necessarily get punished as much when they get arrested. And it's not just with gun crime. We see this with protesters and things like that. I mean, you know, Portland is under siege almost every night and has been for 150 nights. And yet, and Portland PD ends up arresting all these people. And yet, do they get prosecuted? No, they absolutely
Well, that's don't. The other problem. They're not prosecuted. There's no cash bail. They're getting off immediately, correct? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's our justice system is sort of turning into this, you know, Lady Justice is supposed to be blind. She wears a blindfold because she is supposed to follow the law. Everyone is supposed to get treated equally. You know, we talk constantly about equality. Well, now, Malcolm, in a lot of areas of the country, our justice system is not equal. We're talking about equity. Equity doesn't mean equal.
And then I wonder, why doesn't the leadership step up more? Because that really would be able to tip the scales back if the police leadership unified and they said, wait, we can't tolerate this anymore, and really did that. That could make a big difference, couldn't it?
It absolutely could. I mean, you know, the Major City Chiefs Association, for example, puts out statistics and things like that. But you don't see them all stand up together and say, police are not the problem.
Right.
And here is what the problem is.
This case here, Derek Chauvin, everybody should know by now, was found guilty. I think 22 and a half years he got. Was there any surprise there?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, and again, I just have to emphasize, Derek Chauvin does not represent American law enforcement. He doesn't even really represent the Minneapolis Police Department. You know, he's one guy who, you know, you can say whether or not he deserved to get convicted. I think there's a real good chance his conviction is going to get overturned because that whole trial was such a crap show. But he got 22 and a half years. But if you look, of course, you saw on Twitter yesterday that or the other day that people aren't happy. You know, 22 and a half years, that's not enough. This guy is going to have a miserable time in prison. He'll never be able to be in general population. He's going to be attacked.
Right. Well, not only that, but what you say a moment ago, if the appeal and if that does get turned around, you probably will see an uprising in the community like we haven't seen before.
It'll be unbelievable. And don't forget, we've still got three other police officers that are going to come to trial in this case for various different things. You know, this isn't going to end anytime soon.
No, it's not at all there. Sergeant Betsy Smith, again, and appreciate her stopping by. She's a spokesman for the National Police Association. All right, so here's what we'll do now. Up next, Dr. Lee Meng-Young joins us to talk about the CCP. If you can believe this, they want an award for Wuhan. But it also gets more than that, the motives behind the CCP and what they're really up to. And of course, she had lived there all her life and has been very, very outspoken, as you know, about the danger, the cancer that the CCP is. So we're going to take all that up next, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
americaoutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. Well, we've been talking a great deal about the Wuhan lab in China and the origins of the virus, the coronavirus, COVID, if you will. You know, a lot of names for that virus, aren't there? But they all roads lead to the fact that people still have a lot of questions about this virus, and more so who's at the center of it and why it was released onto the world. Now, interesting, you're going to potentially chuckle at what I tell you next here. But China is demanding that its laboratory in Wuhan be awarded the Nobel Prize. That's right. Don't fall over, hit the floor now. But they want a Nobel Prize for its contribution to the research of the coronavirus. Well, China's Foreign Affairs Ministry came out and said they deserve this Nobel Prize in medicine for studying the coronavirus. The minister's statement comes at a very edgy time, to say the least here. Now, one of the caveat here is interesting. The Chinese Academy of Sciences selected the Wuhan Institute of Virology for its outstanding science and technology achievement prize in 2021 for its role in identifying the genome of the virus here. Wow. We're going to talk about the CCP next and this virus here and this award with Dr. Li Mengyang is here, and she's a Chinese virologist, whistleblower. You've heard her on the platform before with me. Welcome to Viewpoint This Sunday, Dr. Li Mengyang.
Hi, Malcolm. Thank you for having me again.
It's terrific to have you here and get this message out here. So the thing, I seen something, a comment you put out on the national media on this somewhere, and you commented back on this award thing, and you said, the nomination clearly shows China's perspective to the world, which is opposite but perfectly fits the CCP's logics. That was your words there. Can you expand upon that and tell us about this, please?
Oh, yeah. So talking about the nomination thing that I know from the Western people thinking this is so hilarious, that how could the government nominate a lab which is suspicious of releasing or maybe accidentally releasing the virus to the world and cause the historic pandemic as Nobel Prize. But the thing is, if you change your idea, you turn to the Chinese Communist Party's side. And let me tell you, it's not a surprise, because we Chinese people, we know how shameless this government is. So basically here, they are just put the next step after their award to the Wuhan lab, after they given the award to the general bioweapons scientist, Dr. Chen Wei, after the Wuhan lab things come out. So after this, they want to push the this kind of award to the international stage, because for the China government, all these things is just part of their anti-COVID trophy. I'm sure people should know that Chairman Xi already did the exhibition to praise the anti-COVID trophy, because China did got a lot after this pandemic.
Isn't this kind of in a weird sort of way where, to me anyways, it looks like they're laughing at the world when they do this?
Oh, they are, yes. You are smart. They are mocking at the world because it's already over 1 year and the democratic countries, because they are nonsense and because China know how to take advantage of the weakness of the democratic regime. So finally, people are still wasting their time in arguing whether this is come from nature, whether this is just an accident done by several innocent scientists. So they didn't realize how terrible the whole pandemic is. They didn't realize the evil purpose behind it. It's the Chinese Communist Party's ambition to take down the democratic regime and take over of all these things.
Yeah. You know, you talk about, we should probably tell listeners, in case they haven't heard you before, Dr. Yan, we should probably tell them, you and I spent a fair amount of time on my daily show, The Voice of a Nation. Why are you so clear, so certain? Let's remind people, and for those who haven't heard you, that this really was a biological weapon that was intentfully released onto the world and not an accident. Why is that?
I just want to emphasize a little bit that this is unrestricted bioweapon. So, which I define it as unrestricted because it's beyond the traditional bioweapon concept. Okay. And I can explain it later. So the thing is, I'm so clear about the China government's, no matter their purpose or their strategies, it's not because this is something very, very confidential or something. It's just because I'm a scientist and doctor living in China for over 30 years. And based on all my knowledge to this government, my own experience, and also combined with my intelligence and expertise, which can help people to understand the nature of SARS-CoV-2, altogether, I can give people kind of a better opinion about how inhumane the Chinese Communist Party is. And of course, talking about the SARS-CoV-2 as an unrestricted bioweapon, it's because I have been working in the WHO reference lab, which is the top emerging disease lab and also coronavirus lab in the world, with a bunch of top scientists in this field for over 5 years. And myself is a scientist who working on the influenza, coronavirus, and vaccine studies. And also, I have my very unique and massive network, social network in China, involving hospital, labs, CDC, and no matter civilian and militaries.
The bigger point is, you've seen it with your own eyes. And I remember you describing to me the moment you seen it. In fact, that was quite a point of the program we did that a lot of listeners commented on. We got overwhelming communications from listeners about that conversation you and I had. And do you remember when I asked you on that program, like the moment you seen this, what went through your mind? And you described it right out there, which is the reference point to why you knew this was what it was and no accident. When you first discovered, you're in the lab in Hong Kong, as you say, the World Health Organization. Tell us what that moment was like again, please.
Okay. I don't quite remember how I described last time, but for me, every time when people ask this, I would tell them that it was shocking. The moment when I realized first WHO is helping to cover up with Chinese Communist Party government. The second thing is that outbreak in Wuhan is far beyond the people's knowledge. And it is terrible if we don't immediately call for the international pressure to Chinese government for the control of this outbreak. And also the third thing is, when I realized this is not a common virus come from some animals, it's not from nature, it is actually the product in the lab based on the People's Liberation Army's unique virus backbone, which means it has going through the gain of function thing, modifications, and become the final weapon virus. So all this together make me shocked, and I realized that if WHO and the scientists are helping China government to cover up the outbreak, so they definitely won't help to reveal the nature of the virus as unrestricted bioweapon. And I have to tell it to the world in my way. I need to manage to find a way to deliver the message out, because according to the characters of the coronavirus, according to the big scale of cover-up from China government and WHO, according to the terrible situation in Wuhan at that time, I mean, this would be a disaster if it's not controlled on time, in time. And I know that I'm not sure whether my voice can be delivered, because there is a lot of surveillance around me in Hong Kong. But luckily, I managed to find out Mr. Luder to deliver this message. The moment when I finally contact him through Twitter message, I feel that I got a very valuable opportunity, that before I get disappeared by the government, there is a chance the message can be delivered out.
And we talk about that on that program, how you escaped Hong Kong, and had you not, you felt your life was at major risk, and the people around you told you that as well, and you knew that it was. You've become a target of so many. I see it out there where you, many of these, what do you call them, like bots, I guess, social media bots and other people, and propaganda is what I'm speaking of, propaganda, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of propaganda and a lot of hate being directed toward you, you know, and they're calling you this and that, and I see some of that. Are you concerned with any of that?
Oh, actually, I'm not concerned about those things, because I know that is Chinese Communist Party's classic strategies, which is used to suppress the voice and suppress the truth. The thing is, I don't want such misinformation to waste people's time, to mislead people and even the government's policies. It's like for the last 1 year, most of the government still treats the virus as nature occurring, because such misinformation campaign provides a misinformation in a professional style to mislead the policymakers and then affect other people. The thing is, I want that Americans and other Western people to realize how cunning Chinese Communist Party is. Those kind of cyber military, you call it bots, and we called it Wumao, which means, these are the people, some are the real people, some are not, just some shadow accounts, are controlled by the Chinese Communist Party government. And this is part of their propaganda. There are many levels. The top level is like, as you say, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, the spokesperson, those people are lying. That is kind of propaganda. And the other level, including the scientists, the doctors, the pharmacists, the medical journals, or WHO, these kind of organizations who help China government to do this to exchange the benefits. And there are also lower levels, like this kind of accounts. Those are the people, no matter in China or overseas, they listen to China government, they control many, many these kind of accounts, just working as like, I will call it like zombie armies to feed people the misinformation and lies and the cursing.
Yeah, I'm so glad you say what you say. I wanted you to explain it. And I really want Americans to understand that a lot of these comments and propaganda, if you notice out there, they're from people that have no influence at all. They usually have zero followers, or they're nothing. In other words, it's propaganda. They're bots, and they're other type of people that are just throwing this out, which is really what the CCP does. They're the masters of propaganda out there in China, correct?
Yes, exactly. The easiest way to identify those bots is to check whether this is a meaningless account. But they are also very cunning, because they use the Western people's profile. They sometimes pretend they are some famous people. I mean, in my case, there are over 100 of the fake accounts using my profile and copying my Twitter and using my name to make this kind of a problem. They just try to muddy the water.
Well, it's clear that the CCP looks at you as a risk. They look at you as a threat to what their story is and their, you know, what they're trying to, the propaganda they're putting out there. What kind of danger are we talking about with the CCP? Why should people, or why should all Americans and all citizens around the world be cautious and question and understand the threat that the CCP is? Why are they such a threat?
It's like this, Malcolm. CCP is not a specific person or specific family. It is ideology. And this ideology has been, this is ideology is because it combines the communism and also the part of Chinese culture make it well played in China over 100 years. And this is a regime which controlled by those people who actually don't really believe the communism, but they know how to take advantage of the communism to get what they want for their personal purpose. And for this purpose, those people, they know how to take advantage to of people, humans' weakness. And then they combine with ideology, with other experience. They now you can see it's well played in China. And also now combined with the high technology, they can control over 1 billion Chinese people. Even they are overseas, they can influence them deeply. The thing is, they are very greedy and cruel during this progress. So this kind of successful repeated experience happened in China, makes the Chinese Communist Party regime become very ambitious. And they want to get more because definitely only in China is not enough for their ambitions. And they want to become from the king of China to the king of the world. And always, democratic countries are their enemies in their eyes because people in democratic countries have freedom, and freedom and courage are the big obstacle for Chinese Communist Party regime to pursue their ambitions all over the world.
I will do everything I can to continue to help you and partner with you to get the truth out in across our country and around the world. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Malcolm. It's very happy to talk with you. And I'm very happy to find the chance to explain the opinions and also my knowledge about Chinese Communist Party, share it with Americans. I think it's very, very important for Americans to understand the evilness of Chinese Communist Party, and the actions are necessary, and we need to do it as soon as possible to prevent Chinese Communist Party win.
Wow. It is a message that needs to be heard. That is Dr. Li Mengyang, and the message with the CCP, I think, is a vital one. We will continue to work with her to get that truth out there, rest assured. And I'm so appreciative of her. Also, Sergeant Betsy Smith, the spokesman for the National Police Association, about the crime escalation in our country, and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer with all the top stories, and more so the power of the vote. Now, everything is back at AmericaOutloud.com. Let's get the truth out there and get this program out there from sea to shining sea. That's what it takes, my fellow Americans, to make an ultimate difference. And listen, as always, I thank you for being with me on the mission forward. It's time to get involved and get loud.